Yeah, I'd like to call the Finance Committee to order. We're three or four short of a quorum, but I'm going to ask that the author, Representative Bingham, walk us through the state contracts, and then hopefully before she's done or shortly thereafter, we'll have a quorum. If I interrupt you with calling the meeting officially to order when we get a quorum, hope you understand. So if you could just start walking us through the bill, and then we'll have to take up the amendments when we get a quorum as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill on St. Patrick's Day, so happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. I don't know that I'm Irish myself. This is the state labor contract ratification bill. This bill ratifies the labor contracts and compensation plans for the various state employees in the executive branch. These nine contracts and four compensation plans have been reviewed and approved by the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, of which I'm the vice chair and have the wonderful responsibility of pushing these contracts through on into law. So I'm going to have Mr. Huebinger go through some of the details, but most of the employees will get a 3.25% increase for their salary across the board, and their premiums for health insurance are unfortunately increasing 6.7% this year and are projected to increase 10% next year. They're all pretty standard contracts. The one special provision in the bill is regarding that the director of the or administrator of the Minnesota Zoo. There's a provision in there that would eliminate the salary limit for this individual, and the salary is currently limited to 130% of the governor's salary. However, the requirement that any salary greater than 95% comes from non-state funds is included in there. So it's a provision to allow so that we can have a competitive edge and we don't lose the administrator. So with that, I will stand for questions or if Mr. Huebinger give any additional details of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Greg Huebinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. I believe you have a copy of the original summary of the bill before the amendments were being suggested today. The last page of that summary has a settlement sheet which the Subcommittee uses to track the cost of the labor contracts, and for the Finance Committee purposes, it might be helpful to understand that the base cost of these contracts so far is about $5.2 billion, and that the cost of the increases that have been negotiated in these contracts is about $300 million. That leads to a cost increase this biennium of about 6%, which is within the 3% per year increase in the appropriation that agencies received during the in the appropriations process during the 07 session. So agencies have to absorb these costs within their operating budgets, but their budgets were increased to pay for these increases.
Okay, at this point, are there any questions of either the author or Mr. Huebinger? It'd be helpful. Okay, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bingham. Testifier, when was the last time that we gave a significant raise to the state workers? Was it in the last contract, or can you give us a little background on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, we have biennial contracts, so employees would have received increases in the last biennium as well. My memory is that those contracts were at about half of the cost of these contracts.
So about 2% per year?
Mr. Chair, I recommend that's correct.
Any other questions? We're one away from a quorum.
want me to switch over and pretend I'm part of the committee?
Temporarily be appointed, yeah. Well, what we'll do, seeing that there doesn't seem to be any other questions, if both of you can stay around for a few minutes, we'll just go to a presentation of the next bill and then revert back as soon as we have enough folks in the room to officially convene.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Our next bill for an overview then would be House File 3868 by Representative Leader. Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 3868 is basically a correction bill. What happened in the Transportation Finance Division bill, if you look in the on the bill itself, you see that there was either a typo or a miscalculation on the converting the rate of the natural gas or gas from gasoline, and that's what it is. It's basically a correction on line 1.12 is really the total part of the bill. I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Leader, what we can now do, we now have a quorum, so I'll officially convene the meeting, and we'll finish this bill up, Representative Ingham, before we revert back. So the meeting is convened, and Representative Leader, you were here first. Would you care to move the minutes?
I move the adoption of the subcommittee report on
the minutes. Would you care to move the minutes?
Beg your pardon?
I was asking you to move the minutes, seeing that you were the first here.
Oh, the minutes? Okay.
Representative Leader moves approval of the minutes for March 10th, 2008. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Now the Representative Leader of the Subcommittee report.
I move the adoption of the Subcommittee report on House File 3868.
Okay, Representative Leader moves the report from the Transportation Finance Division. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Leader, do you want to take the...
I'll explain the bill again quickly. On line 1.12 in the bill, it was basically a typo or a correction for the conversion to natural gas from the gasoline. Rate, and also changes the date of the enactment to April 1st this year of 2008. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the amendment 83868A1.
So maybe we'll Representative Leader moves House File 3868 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And Representative Leader now moves the amendment. H3-H68A1, Representative Leader on the amendment.
Basically what this amendment does, and we have someone in the audience from the Department of Revenue, what it authorizes that the money that we raise with the new monies, basically if you call it the new monies on the surtax on the gasoline, it allows them to handle that money the same way they handle the existing gas tax. In other words, they can pay reimbursements for people and exemptions. That's basically the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carried, but we'll revert back to the question. Who did we ask? Oh, Representative Lanchesky, I didn't see your hand up, sorry.
No problem. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question actually for the Department of Revenue person on the entire bill.
Okay, and they're here. So.
I don't know who that is, but oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. My name is Pat Finnegan from the Revenue Department.
Thank you. Mr. Finnegan, and I apologize, I had to step out of the room for just a minute, and I didn't hear all of what Representative Leader said, but if I'm understanding this correctly, is this just really a technical change and an error in the transportation bill that we already passed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lunacek, yes it is. And we weren't clear that the bill was going back to the Tax Committee, so... The amendment, part of the transportation finance bill currently enacted debt service surcharge, and it puts it in the petroleum tax chapter, but it's all of our provisions in there talk about administering a tax. So what the amendment did was just give us the same authority to administer that surcharge as we do for the tax.
Mr. Chair, if I may. And Mr. Finnegan, was your understanding that that's what Representative Weider's bill was doing, and this has come forward in another bill, 3868, just to clarify that?
The amendment does that, Mr. Chair, that the amendment does okay. That. The clarification in the bill itself was a typographical problem where all the rates were increased 10%, and on the compressed natural gas, 10% would have been... would have been 1.913 per thousand, and the way it came through on the bill was 1.1913. There was an extra one, so that was just that's what the bill was, just correcting that mistake.
Thank you, Mr. Finnegan. Mr. Chair, I don't believe this needs to go to taxes. It's really not a substantive issue. It appears it was just an oversight. So, if bipartisanly people are comfortable with that, I don't think it needs to go there. It could go to the floor.
We can certainly change that motion. Do you want it in relation to me? Okay. Then Representative Leader will change the motion that House File 3868 be recommended to pass and be referred to the general orders. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, and all those in favor signify. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted
to say
that
I'm trying to move rather rapidly.
I was just going to say that,
just so everybody understands.
On March 17th, we ought to do anything that a person named Finnegan tells us.
Oh, okay. And I noticed he had his green tie on. The reason I'm moving rather rapidly is we've got to get back onto the Bingham bill so that we have a time period that the bill has to be up on the House floor 4 hours. So, all those in favor then of the leader motion that will be recommended to pass, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Bingham. And we'll need a couple of motions from Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 3138.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Kahn.
And also, I move that House File 3138 as amended be recommended to pass.
Okay, that motion is before us, and there is an amendment in your packets, Representative. It's in green.
Yes.
In keeping with your sweater, but
yes.
Good match. If you could explain the amendment, or Representative Kahn moves the amendment. Okay, the motion is before us, Representative Bingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. These four provisions are the contracts that the Subcommittee on Employee Relations last week ratified. They are the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, Interfaculty Organization, which is with Minsky, then the Minsky Administrators, and then Office of Higher Ed.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. For those of you that arrived a few minutes late, she's already presented the bill, but are there any questions then before we vote on the motion that the bill be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice to see the legislator having the responsibility of carrying such an important bill. When I was the first term legislator, the most important bill that I carried was one which has actually had a little interest this past week, and that was criminalizing the act of customers of prostitutes. That was my major accomplishment in my first
term. During your first term?
Yes.
And how long ago was that?
That was very long ago, and you voted for it.
Okay. And,
that one person, there was one Republican.
I didn't mean for you to date both of us. That's
I know. One Republican legislator voted against it, who shall be nameless in public. And
What? No, they were not right. And Representative Martin and Speaker Martin Szabo sent him a note saying, what's the matter? The penalty's too tough.
Yeah, that's a bit of the history I didn't know.
Okay. I know.
Well, now we go down to Representative Hausman's bill, House File 2941. Representative Hausman?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 2941 be recommended, as we will amend it, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Hausman, you have an amendment?
I move Amendment A1. It just simply changes the numbers to match the amounts we're moving forward this year, $40 million for asset preservation for the University of Minnesota, and $60 million for MinSU, for a total of $100 million for asset preservation for our public colleges and universities.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hausman, any further comments?
Just that we think this is an important provision that we better be moving forward.
The motion would be to re-refer this then to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion on the motion? Pardon?
Yes.
Oh, didn't we vote on it? Oh, excuse me. I'm in my moving fast mode.
Yeah, we just voted, didn't we?
I thought we voted on it.
Yeah.
We voted on it.
Okay.
Yeah, we voted
okay.
on it. No, that's all right. I'm more than pleased when you're making sure we're on the straight and narrow here. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. By the way, just for your information, on your printed agenda, House File 3876 by Representative Atkins and House File 3132 by Representative Mullery, both of those bills have been pulled for this morning. So if there's anybody here in the audience that was following those, we will not be taking them up. There was a revised agenda that came out, but the printed agenda had that included. Okay, we go down to House File 27. Yeah, we did the final motion, yeah. House File 2783 by Representative Wills.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Okay, and Representative Murphy.
I move adoption of the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division Report for House File 2783, First Committee in Growth.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Seeing none, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy?
I move
A1 amendment. We would, we'll move the bill first, then we'll move the amendment.
I move House File 2783 First Committee Endorsement as amended. I move the amendment.
Yeah, just move the bill, and then we'll... Representative Murphy moves that House File... Okay, and now we have the amendment, and a new one is being passed out. So Representative Swales will take the amendment first to get the bill in the order that you would like. So Representative Murphy, would you like to move the amendment?
The DE2?
The DE2 that's just currently being passed out. Apparently there was an error in the amendment that was in the packet. So
we can throw the DE1?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move the DE2 amendment to House File 2783.
Okay, the amendment is before us. Representative Wells here to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Minnesota P16 Council has been in existence since 2002. Its current chair is President Brunix from the University of Minnesota. Its previous chairs were Commissioner Segrin and Chancellor McCormick from MinSU. The reason that I'm bringing this bill forward, and the amendment is pretty straightforward about what it's asking, it's fairly clear that this P16, which we are now going to turn into a P20 partnership, and what that stands for is preschool through graduate school. We are trying to create a seamless educational system between all of these different entities so that as we are preparing the 21st century workforce, the high schools, the elementary schools, pre-K education is also preparing our students for secondary education. One of the things, though, that we've discovered, I served on the high school redesign subcommittee this summer and this fall, and as we were listening to information provided by the P16 partnership, we discovered that there are no legislators sitting on that committee. And being the policymakers of the state, because they were providing information and doing things as a partnership that really does have policy impact, we felt that it was important that we have representation at the table. Other states that have P16 or P20 partnerships also have representation by legislators. We think that this is a very needed thing for our state in order to move education forward in a positive way. So I would urge your adoption of this change, and I do want you to know that the stakeholders from higher ed, the Department of Ed, and K-12 organizations are very on board with this language, and would I urge your support.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment and the DE2? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Murphy then renews her motion that House File 2783, the first committee engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and place on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now have House File 3090 by Representative Morrow. Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of Transportation Finance Division report for House File 3090.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Leader?
I move that House File 3090 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Morrow, if you'd care to walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, we've been working with MnDOT on this bill, and before we get into the bill itself, there is an oral amendment to the bill, Mr. Chair, that I will explain and then ask a member to move it. What my hope is on line 1.10, Mr. Chair, after the word three is to insert the word other. Then, Mr. Chair, also on line 1.10, to return the word deputy and to the text. And then finally, Mr. Chair, to return lines, the cross out at line 1.11 and 1.12, to return the last sentence to the text of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move the oral amendment to lead in.
Okay, Representative Leader moves the amendment. Everybody follow that? Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That carries the bill in the form that you wanted. So
it does. And Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is MnDOT has no problem with the bill now that we've made those amendments. It gives MnDOT a little bit more flexibility, allows them to have two deputy commissioners, where originally there was going to be one deputy commissioner. And members, I'll keep it brief. This is a bill to create a chief engineer at the deputy commissioner level within MnDOT. And I do have one gentleman, Mr. Eggen, to testify to that bill.
You're welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
I'm Tom Eggum, a civil engineer licensed in Minnesota. I'm the past St. Paul City Engineer and Director of Public Works. Now I work with PKDA, a Minnesota Engineering, Architecture, and Planning Consultant. Thank you for this opportunity to make a short presentation. I'm here today speaking for this bill as a citizen and as a member of the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers. Other Minnesota professional groups also support this legislation. We believe that having the Chief Deputy Commissioner serve as Chief Engineer is the best way for Minnesota to provide and manage its necessary transportation obligations. In MnDOT, this is at the core. MnDOT at its core is an engineering organization, and engineers are licensed to safeguard health, property, promote public welfare, and we are guided by a code of ethics and laws and rules regarding responsible charge over engineering work on behalf of the state requires a licensed professional engineer. 11 states currently have a licensed engineer as their transportation commissioner. Engineers have high standards of training, knowledge and experience for emergency situations. And finally, I'd like to mention that they possess the technical and managerial expertise to credibly represent Minnesota on the national level among other high-level engineers. And this can affect not only the quality of transportation, the federal funding for it. Thank you.
Okay, are there any questions? Grab some time.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, reading the statute, looking at 326.02, it seems to be a very, very broad statute. For example, it includes professional geoscience, it includes land surveying, it includes landscape architecture, it includes interior design. You know, there is, and I'm not even sure if going to subdivision 3, the practice of professional engineering limits it. I'm not quite sure what you're intending here or if this bill does that, and I'm also just, you know, I was brought up as a believer in more theoretical science than engineering, and I just wondered if there, if under circumstances you might want somebody who had broader qualifications than a professional engineer. So I'm asking almost a question in two directions. Should they be narrower or should they be broader? But it's a very, if you look at what that statute is, it's extremely broad.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn to Mr. Eggman for a moment, but the intent was, in some ways, Representative Pound, to keep it narrow in the sense of a professional engineer at one of the two deputy commissioner levels who could serve as a chief engineer. In terms of the licensing under 326.02, Representative Pound, I have to admit, I don't speak to specifics on that, but perhaps Mr. Eggman could do that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pound, this legislation does not propose to require the transportation commissioner be a registered engineer. It's the chief deputy position, and while not presently required by any statute to have the deputy be an engineer, we believe it makes sense because MnDOT is at its core an engineering organization, and all of the other functions necessary are in support of that technical mission.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I just have this annoying habit of when given a statutory reference in a bill, I tend to look it up. And looking at the statutory reference, the definition is extremely broad in 326.02. And if you want to speak pretty broad, it doesn't sound as if that's what you said, and it doesn't sound as if that's what Representative Morrow said. And in which case, unless you want a geoscientist, a land surveyor, a landscape architect, or a certified interior designer to be that deputy engineer, you need to narrow the definition beyond what the statute calls for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Conn, I just checked with folks from MnDOT, and the folks from MnDOT suggest what we may look into is actually broadening it from 0.02 to run from 0.02 to 0.15, and that may give the flexibility that you may be discussing the types of professional engineers that could serve in the chief engineer role. And those will be conversations we'll continue to have with MnDOT.
Well, Chairman, I don't know what you want. The testimony seemed to be that you wanted to have it much more narrow. Looking at the statute, I saw it was very broad, and your testimony, and you're now saying that you want it broader. I mean, I don't know what you want, and I don't know what's good. I just want the bill to say what. Something that makes sense. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Conn. Representative Conn, you're right in the sense of narrowing, in the sense of wanting a professional licensed engineer in that chief engineer role. I will have to review the statute again with MnDOT to make sure that we have the appropriate section to make sure that it's a professional licensed engineer in that role.
Well, Mr. Chairman, why don't we set the bill aside for a minute until we do that?
Tomorrow, would you, are the appropriate people here from MDOT? I know you've got Mr. Eggham to take a look at that.
I'd
temporarily lay the bill over it.
Well, I have the second, but I can show it to Representative Conn and come back.
Okay, we'll just temporarily lay this bill over. We have other for us this morning then, and revert back to it after they do some work on that. We're going to go to Representative Paymar's bill now. What the discussion I was just having, they are going to, they don't think there's a fiscal impact with the Olin bill, but Representative Marks is having one of the fiscal analysts check on that as we speak, and they'll have an answer probably in about 5 or 10 minutes. So we'll lay that one over temporarily as well, and then we will go down to the Paymar bill, House File 2877. Okay, Representative Paymar, you want to move the division report?
Chair, I'd move adoption of the Public Safety and Civil Justice Finance Division report for House File 2877.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
And then,
Representative Paymar?
Then I'd move House File 2877 be recommended to pass, placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us, if you'd care to explain the bill.
Mr. Chair, this is a fairly simple bill that it repeals the current offense of disarming a peace officer, which is part of the current statute under obstructing legal process, and it creates a new statute, disarming a peace officer, and
I wonder, Representative Morrow and Representative Conn, our chief author was giving you the eye as well as the chair. Maybe you could just step outside. Thank you. Representative Paymar.
The bill also expands the definition of disarming a peace officer to include all defensive devices. So this would include not just the attempt to try to take a firearm, but also other equipment that a peace officer has on his or her possession, including a tear gas compound or an electronic incapacitation device, which is cop speak for a taser, a club or a baton or any other weapon that or tool that a police officer needs to defend him or herself. This is a serious problem in this state. We have over 200 police officers who are assaulted in the line of duty every year. So that's the bill. It makes the person who's guilty of trying to disarm a police officer a felony. And I would urge your support and stand for questions.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Paymar renews his motion that House File 2877 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Where do we go next? Okay. Representative Hosh, House File 1625. And Representative Paymar, I think you probably have a couple of motions for us on this one as well. Representative Hodges, Bill. The division report.
Move adoption of the Public Safety and Civil Justice Finance Division Report to House File 1625 to committee's engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Paymar?
And then I would move House File 1625 first committee engrossment be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 1625 does several things with Statute 518B, which deals with harassment orders and orders for protection. Mainly, the most significant change is that it allows the ability for a judge to issue up to a 50-year order for protection or harassment order if an individual has violated a previous order two or more times. Some other changes made within the statute 518D just updates some of our language to reflect current technology to include no contact with emails and electronic communications, and also to bring some consistency between the initial orders so it can last 2 years for both order for protections and harassment orders. There was an inconsistency in that prior to this legislation. Due to time, that is mainly the main changes with this legislation, and I'm open to questions.
Okay, are there any questions on the bill? Very good. Then all those in favor of the Paymar motion that House File 1625 be recommended to pass and placed in the General Register signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We now go down to a bill by Representative Paymar, the Dangerous Dogs Bill, House File 2906. You must have had a pretty a busy division lately.
Chair, I would move adoption of the Public Safety and Civil Justice Finance Division Report for House File 2906. First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, this bill is...
We'll need to move the bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I move House File 2906, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Paymar.
Mr. Chair, this bill just simply strengthens a current statute on the dangerous dog law that was enacted in 1988. Some of you probably know and probably have gotten emails from people. There's been some legislation that's been introduced or proposals to ban certain breeds of dogs because of some incidents that have happened both in the Twin Cities as well as Greater Minnesota with certain breeds of dogs. This bill is not that bill. This bill simply strengthens the current dangerous dog bill and provides provisions. I don't know how much you want me to go into detail, Mr. Chair. It was heard in Public Safety Policy as well as Public Safety Finance Committee. It's what we're essentially saying here is that the dogs are not born dangerous, and it's really the owner's responsibility to train dogs properly. And so we've tried to provide some language here that tightens up what happens if you do possess a dangerous dog and how you must regulate a dangerous dog. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Hey, Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say it's a good bill. It's not breed specific. It's an existing little town of 2,500 people. Chief, here in the last year, we've had to enforce two of these. It's a serious problem, and this bill really helps tighten it up without being a bunch of onerous regulations. So.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, too. I forgot I had an amendment. I forgot I have an oral amendment, if I may.
Okay.
Two oral amendments on page 6, line 17, after the word subdivision 1, insert the word that. And on page 7, line 3, after the word change of location, insert the word where the dog will reside.
Okay, everybody have the oral amendment? The Tamar Moose amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Representative Tamar. Think we got a couple of questions. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tamar, without trying to read the whole thing in a quick fashion, is there a difference between, let's say, I own a dog, and someone comes onto my property and agitates the dog, but we don't really know that, and the dog bites that person. Is there a difference between that or my dog going to my neighbor's yard and biting them there?
Yes, there is.
Representative Tamar.
I need to find this language.
But if you just tell me if there is a difference, I'll trust you.
Yes, there is. If the exemptions would be if someone trespasses on your property and, you know, if your dog bites, that's too bad. If your dog is provoked, they're getting me the language right here. The exemptions under subdivision 5, if someone is willfully trespassing on your property and your dog bites them, or is provoked, tormented, abused, the dog is exempt from this, or if someone was trying to commit a crime on your property.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cornish, a little bit like a castle doctor for dogs.
Yes.
We have Representative Hartnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a definition of a dangerous dog in here? I've been looking for it, but I...
Yes, there is.
Representative Hamer.
The dangerous dog definition is already in statute, and I can read it to you if you'd like. It's very quick. This is in the existing law. This, what the bill is modifications of the law. Dangerous dog means any dog that has, without provocation, inflicted substantially bodily harm on a human being on a public or private property, killed a domestic animal without provocation while off the owner's property, or has been found to be potentially dangerous, and after the owner has noticed that the dog is potentially dangerous, the dog aggressively bites, attacks, or endangers the safety of humans and domestic animals. That's current law. There's also a standard left for potentially dangerous dogs. So in the case where a dog gets out of the house and bites the mailman, for instance, that might be considered a potentially dangerous dog, but doesn't rise to the level of a dangerous dog, which I just would remind the committee that substantially bodily harm means temporary but substantial disfigurement, substantial loss of impairment of the function of any bodily member of an organ. So the dog would have to have done some fairly egregious things to somebody.
Chairman, when I'm door knocking, I've occasionally been bit by a dog. Am I trespassing on the dog's property then? And so therefore, that's not a dangerous dog. I'm the danger.
Would you repeat the question? So if you're door knocking and...
I get bit by a dog when I step on the property. Is that a dangerous dog or is that a dangerous door knocker?
That's a dangerous door knocker. It's the liability of our profession.
You know, Captain Tamar, I've done an awful lot of door knocking over the past 36 years and more for other candidates before that, and I've never... I've encountered some dogs. I've always used discretion. But never have been bitten by a dog. Now that I've said that, this next election I'll probably have to be really careful. We got Representative Slowick next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tamar, I just had a question on the first page about changing the bond amount from $50,000, increasing that to $300,000. Why was that figure arrived at, and why did you increase it so substantially?
As I understand it, and I can have Mr. Forbes from the Animal Humane Society testify, is that that is the current level of existing homeowners insurance that people typically have, the minimum amount. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair?
And that you should have homeowners insurance, especially if you have a dangerous dog.
Chair, Representative Paymar, so they could get a settlement of up to $300,000, right? Right now it's up to about $50,000, so it raises the ceiling to be more in compliance.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, Representative Grantley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Paymar for dealing with this bill. I'm sure we all know all the other bills we've passed by without a word. We can hear ourselves talking on this one. And, of course, our constituents do the same thing. And I'm very grateful that you work so carefully on this. I think it will satisfy the comments that I've had from constituents, including a couple of veterinarians. So thank you very much. And now, if you could just deal with puppy mills, I'd be happy.
I've told the animal folks that this is my first and last animal bill.
Representative Tamar, I had a dangerous dog bill one time, I think I probably heard from just about every dog owner in the state before it was finally passed. But it does generate a lot of interest. Representative Yarrow.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Tamar, you said that dogs are not born mad. If you know so much, are men or people born mad, or do they acquire? I've been bitten 4 times in Yugoslavia and once here. I guess it's because I'm a chicken. I'm afraid of them. They know that I'm scared of them, so they attack me.
Are men and people in general born mad, or are they just raised that way? You seem to be more lenient on dogs than men, people.
Will the chair of our public safety division care to respond to Representative Garros?
Representative Garros, I tend to believe that that human beings aren't born evil or mad or angry or hostile, that they're socialized to be that way, and they're not given love and affection. And I think if you probably looked at the composition of our state prisons, you'd find that most of those people have been sexually or physically abused sometime in their life. So if you chain a human being up in a basement, they're going to be mad and angry. If you chain a dog up in a basement, it's going to be mad and angry, and they're probably going to bite you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, when you and I came here, life sentence in our prisons was 17 years. Right now, I believe it's 34 at least. Representative Wenzel raised it to 34, I think. What is it? Is it still 34? What's the life sentence in Minnesota? I haven't been on corrections committee for 20 years.
Life? Are you talking about the first degree murder?
Yes.
In some cases, it could be life without
right,
parole.
Right.
Depending on the aggravating circumstances.
Okay, any further discussion on Representative Paymar's motion that House File 2906, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Froberg, would you be ready to go next with House File 3569?
You want me to do it from here? Do you want me to
do it? In case there's some discussion on this one, maybe if you don't mind. We'll also be hearing from the University of Minnesota. There's a substitution of authors here, so maybe if the university could come down at this point and be sure to engage in the discussion as well. And is Representative Clark here? Anybody from that division here? Well, Representative Clark, do you want to make a couple of motions? The first one is to adopt your committee report on House File 3569, the first engrossment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did move the adoption of the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division report for House File 3569, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Clark moves then that House File 3569, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. That motion is before us. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to substitute for Representative Ruth Amina, one of the co-authors. This is the bill that deals with the appropriations of the University of Minnesota for the study of the mesothelioma problem that exists in the range. I think everyone is familiar with that particular difficulty, and they've engaged the University of Minnesota in cooperation with the Minnesota Department of Health in a very extensive study. They have set out the protocols that are needed for this particular study. If there's any particular questions on the study itself, we have a couple of people from the University of Minnesota here that are intimately involved in that particular study, and otherwise I think the appropriation is self-explanatory.
Okay, and if the gentlemen from the university could identify themselves and perhaps comment then on the study.
Yes, my name is John Finnegan. I'm dean and professor at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. And with me is Dr. Jeffrey Mandel, who is a professor in the Division of Environmental Health Sciences, which is part of the School of Public Health. And so we have been deeply involved in pulling together the investigative team that has come up with the study design that will be conducted over the next 3 to 5 years. And I believe the staff has details of what's involved in that study, but essentially we're going to be looking at the health of minors. We are going to be looking at the health of their spouses and partners, and we are going to be looking at the air quality within the communities on the Iron Range to look at larger issues of exposure as well.
Okay, and Dr. Mandel, would you care to comment any further?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, so are there any questions on the bill? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's unfair of me to direct it to this new author, but since Representative Riccovino was the chief author, I have to at least raise it in this context. With all the new mining projects, I mean, we're looking backward and trying to correct past mistakes, but there are new mining projects, and I know Representative Riccovino on many occasions has been a little concerned that the Environment Committee would sort of get in the way of some of those mining projects. And I'm wondering if we at least need to acknowledge, as we're studying past effects, whether going forward that shouldn't always be a concern for us, that we build in, that we, as we move forward, remember these impacts and say, how do we prevent this in the future?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I think you hit the crux of the purpose of the study to begin with, is not to be able to say this has happened in the past, but how do you prevent it from happening in the future? And of course, in order to do this, you have to know the reasons why
with Ms. Powell and me, too. And that's the extent of the protocols. I've looked at some of the protocols that they're planning to study. And not being a scientist in that particular, I've been impressed with their objectivity in trying to have a very complete study. But Iron Range is 107 miles long, and when the mining operations, the natural operations closed in the early 70s in Bovee, many of those people worked for Pickett Masters Mining Company, and they traveled into and drove 60, 70 miles every day to the mines in Babbitt. And so if they were exposed in the western end of the range or the eastern end of the range, we don't know that, so that's why this is a very extensive study. But I think our ultimate goal is to make sure that, you know, mining will continue to be operating in Minnesota, and we want to make sure that if there are procedures, what is causing this, if there are procedures that need to be changed, they need to be changed. And I think that's the ultimate goal, is that you've established it.
Representative Hudson is that. Hey, Representative Earhart.
My question was answered, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Solberg, I think the study makes a lot of sense. I guess my question is, why is the University of Minnesota, why would we have the University of Minnesota pay for it as opposed to the mines, and have the mines stepped up to pay for any part of the study? Seems like another, this is a little different than we've handled it in maybe some of the other industries.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know if I can give you a good answer on that. We've had discussion with mining companies on it, and one of the Cleveland Cliffs at one time when this came forward said, well, we'll conduct our own study on it, and we resisted that, and they actually pulled back from that a bit, because I think the most important procedure for us to have a good long-term independent study is to have the reputation of the University of Minnesota. Now, whether or not the mining companies would step forward, we would welcome that. I think they do have some responsibility. But it is more than just the mining companies, because they're setting, maybe there's nothing related to the mining companies with this. Maybe it's some exposure some other place. And that's the important part of the study. So I think we need to have that independence. The reputation of the University of Minnesota is without any question. And so, therefore, I think we need to be able to go forward with that. And it is a society problem as well. So I hope I answered your question the best I could.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like Representative Hausman, I'm glad I've lived long enough here at the legislature to see that the range is concerned about the environment, as I know they have always been, but there's also that tension of jobs and everything else. And I remember the Taconite tailings, Miles Lord discussion, and sometimes in the pressure to have jobs and survive and have livelihood, we have sacrificed health and environmental issues. Hope, and with the agriculture and with many other things, where we've just hoped that somehow it wouldn't quite turn out to be such a mark in terms of the what happened and people's health. So I think this is a very good result that this comes forward from range legislators out of the health committee. And I agree with Representative Solberg that the university is a good place to have a good independent study. I also agree with Representative Pepin that industry itself should be paying more attention to these health issues. And it should be, you know, part of what they pay for and what they take into account with their profit. So I think all around this is a very good bill and a very good discussion.
And Representative Church.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to maybe branch a little bit off because this actually deals more with an era of our country and industry than a region, and I think that's important to note right now, because part of the issue with this is it deals primarily with asbestos or asbestos-like particles, and it's not just northern Minnesota that was experiencing the use of asbestos in manufacturing and in homes, and many plumbers and other manufacturing facilities used asbestos years ago. And so I just want to make sure folks know and understand why it also is a state responsibility. Is I've received phone calls from individuals now that live in St. Paul and all over Minnesota who worked previously in northern Minnesota in the mines decades ago, and they are concerned and have questions, and we need to respond to them in whole that way as well. So it's important. I've learned more about geology from the University of Minnesota and others on this issue than I ever thought I would, and I want to thank them for, and Rush and Brookavina, actually, who's not here, and sometimes it's easier to compliment him when he's not in the room, but hopefully it gets back to him. He really worked in partnership with the university in finding an objective and organization to look at this very complicated and important issue.
Hey, Representative Follett.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Solberger, to the testifiers. First of all, I also think this is a good bill. Along Representative Sturgis's comments line is Sue Vento is a constituent of mine. That's all we know is Bruce Vento died of cancer related to mesothelioma. And so it was from asbestos, apparently, from when he was on a Navy ship a long time ago. So it is in different places, and she was very involved in passing federal legislation related to that. So my question, what it seems to be that they can trace when you're talking about mesothelioma, that it's traced back to asbestos. So when you think of the study and what's happening, I mean, can they isolate exactly what's happening in the mines? It seems like this type of cancer is so specific and so isolated. And again, I'm naive. I'm not either a research scientist or a doctor. But just having heard of it from my constituents, I was curious about drawing those correlations and how that works.
Mr. Chair, panel members, I'm Jeff Mando. I'm a professor in the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, and I've been coordinating the proposal as I believe you've seen it. The question as far as the specific exposure causing mesothelioma is what we intend to understand through the study. And you're absolutely right to question the methods around these types of things because they're not straightforward. But basically, we try to get a hold of exposure information that the companies keep through the years. And we try to correlate that with what particular jobs people work in. So if we understand their work histories and we understand the exposure information and we also understand what other types of asbestos exposure they may have had, then we can sort out statistically and through methods that are standardized now and well-developed, we can understand where the exposures are likely to have been resulting in these mesothelioma cases.
Mr. Chair.
That's
a follow-up. And that makes sense. I mean, in my district, we're dealing with, you know, we have 3M and we have the water contamination, and now they're going back to the landfills and they're trying to clean up the water and they're trying to trace what the workers were and then who drank the water, and I have constituents that drank the water that don't know if they're affected. And, you know, it is, when we have these public health issues, it is so important that we take a look at those because, as we know, it's affecting people's lives. And and I know it's not easy, but hopefully, yeah, sooner than later we can learn the correlation here, because I know it's definitely in our water issues out there. Seems like it's going to be a while till we have it all figured out. So, thank you.
Tim, just a comment. My brother died from mesothelioma as well. He never worked in the mine. don't know where he was exposed to asbestos, but he may have been, and maybe it's service related. One of the things about this disease is it takes a long for it to manifest itself, if that is the exposure that's necessary. And so this study is extremely important. Hopefully we will learn a lot from this, not just in the mine related area, but other related areas as well.
Okay, we have Representative Saylor next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe this question would be for the testifiers. I am sort of following up on Representative Hausman's concerns. I just want a little clarification. On line 1.11 and 1.12, it talks about including a comprehensive study of workers' lung health And then down at 1.17 to 1.2, it kind of expands upon that. What I want a clarification on, if you could, is this study really only about lung problems or potential lung problems, or does this study include, say, other forms of cancer, other things that could occur from mining or something else? I just wanted clarification, please.
Dr. Mandel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and committee members, the study is a more comprehensive study than just looking at lung disease. We're going to try to focus on lung disease because we know that's the target organ for these deaths. But there are actually three health studies and two environmental sampling studies, one in the workplace and one in the community. So there's a total of five studies, actually, if you want to start counting them. But one of the health studies involves what we call a cause-of-death study. It's based on the people who have worked in the mining industry going back to the inception of the taconite industry and going forward in time. And we've identified 75,000 or so workers who were in the industry. And getting hold of the death certificates, we then code the death, the cause of death. So we're looking at, in that particular study, we're looking at a range of every conceivable cause of death. There's another type of study that we're doing which involves screening of current and former workers and their spouses. And in that study, we're going to be getting detailed information through the histories that physicians or physician assistants will be taking. So we'll have a much more in-depth understanding of a variety of different illnesses that these people have undergone, as well as their families, including the spouses will undergo that same examination, and we'll also find out whatever we can about their family histories, including the children.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to also say this is a very, very important study, and the committee was glad to hear it, and I am totally in support of the study. And I actually wanted to just say, at some point, one of the things about the community study that we're not doing, that I think should be doing, is also looking at the children. We're only looking at the spouses of the workers. And some of the most important part of the community impact should be looking at the children. So I just wanted to mention that. My understanding in the committee is that the resources were not prioritized to deal with the children. So just so the committee knows, at some point in the future, I think that should be something that we look at. I did also just want to say one other thing. I asked Beth Finnegan for the ties to industry of the people who serve on the advisory committee and who are working on this project, because as several people have mentioned, it's really important that we have good objective science here and that we also look at other possible sources. And I want to thank Professor Finnegan for giving that to me. It does leave me with some questions. I didn't get a chance to go through all of it until just recently, and so I want to just say that on the record that I would like to continue to look at some of the industry ties to some of the researchers and actually the scientific advisory committee, which has three or four scientific advisory board members with pretty strong industry ties. So I just want to make sure, this is all in the interest of making sure we have very objective science.
Okay, thank you, and Representative Khan.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, again, this bill is terrific and all that. I just want to put out another story on the table. I parked my car at Silver Bay near any mines, I don't think, for about a week while I went bicycling through that part of the state. When I came back, it was totally covered with some thick black dust. So you may need to look much more at just the people who are working in the area, but the people who are living in the area. So,
Mr. Chair, Mr. O'Connor, I think that study anticipates that.
Mm-hmm. Did the Representative Khan was edited?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Solberg. I'm not sure if you have this information or if the professor has it, but this is a one-time appropriation for the University of Minnesota, $4.9 million in this fiscal year. And the report goes from 2008 to 2013. Are we looking at additional funding required before that report comes out? The reason I say that is we've had this before where we've had the study go on and then all of a sudden in future appropriations, the legislature decides that they're not going to fund that, the thing was cut off before we got an answer to that. I'm wondering if you can give us some kind of idea what type of funding, how much, and how long.
Dr. Finnegan?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, $4.9 million that we're requesting for this is the cost of the total study, and it's to address exactly the issue that you raised, which is that in the past the studies have been conducted on a piecemeal basis. So for the studies that we have laid out for you, we do not anticipate coming back asking for additional funding to be able to do that. This money will cover that cost. Should there be additional studies at some point, Representative Clark, for example, raised the question of whether we need to look at children down the line, then of course that would involve separate funding. But at this point, the studies that are laid out, the four or the five studies that Dr. Mandel spoke of, this funding will cover that.
Representative Stevenson, look at it.
Yes.
Okay, any further questions, discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Clark removes her. Renews her motion that House File 3569, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Now we'll revert.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you for... that's right. He'll be disappointed that, he won't be disappointed if Bill passed, but that he wasn't here for whatever reason. The next one that I simply have next in the file here is Representative Olin. That was one that we had temporarily laid over, and we've got the additional information we needed. This one had been in Representative Lagenius' division. Okay. Is the chair moves the adoption of the Environmental and Natural Resource Finance Division report for House File 3312. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The chair moves that House File 3312 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill does basically only one thing. Up till now, a 1987 law, in effect, placed the amount of money that could be kept in a drainage ditch fund at $40,000 for purposes of repairs. All this bill does is change that $40,000 up to $100,000 instead. The reason being, if you were to apply any kind of inflationary numbers, you'd probably be at $108,000 or $109,000. You'd be beyond $100,000. But this bill is just to allow counties and soil and water districts to keep more money on hand so they can actually do repair projects without having to all of a sudden levy because they can't get more than $40,000. Kept on hand. The only, and I would request that this be forwarded on, I realize Al King from the Drainage Work Group is here. His real concern is the Drainage Work Group hasn't met on it, and I requested that they try to do a telephone poll just to verify there's no objection by them, so I have been trying to work at it, but I'd just like to keep this bill moving because I don't think they'll have any objections. I stand for questions.
Okay, are there any questions of Representative Olin? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Olin, just reading this, the research on it looks different than the statute that I read last night. I'm sorry if I'm confused, just because I am. Does this give the government entity more authority to levy an assessment? Or is that just increasing the amount that's available for that entity on hand?
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo. It would not give the authority to do more. It would just give the authority to actually come up with the, keep a steady levy on the numbers, so maybe it does go beyond $40,000. Because under today's law, if they went beyond $40,000, which quite frankly isn't going to repair them very much of anything, we'd have to levy it all in one year. This would just avoid all of a sudden getting hit with a situation where, okay, now we got to add 50% by a bonding bill of some sort on you because we don't have the money. This would just make it a more steady procedure. And it would actually, I think, help instead of hurt the situation.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Grapple.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olin, I just was concerned because I'm seeing the potential for a larger assessment would exist, but I guess what you're saying is that the assessment's going to be the same either way. It's just a matter of whether it's spread out over a time or one lump sum. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, because from a practical point, that's what would end up happening. If you had to do a repair job that was going to cost closer to 100 than that 40, you'd have to all of a sudden hit them all in one year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm told that Mr. Kane would like to comment from Bowser. Mr. Kane, if you could be brief, we generally reserve the testimony for the divisions, but members are free to ask anyone in the audience a question. So my question is, what would you like to comment on?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Al Kane. I serve as Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I also facilitate a drainage work group that is a group of stakeholders involved in drainage issues. And we met last on the 29th of January. This is a topic that has not been discussed by that work group. I did a little polling via email just about any potential concerns. There are some folks on that work group who have concern that it hasn't been discussed by the work group and wonder if this is something that potentially should be. So I just want to express the fact that there is a drainage work group of stakeholders. It is a group that does discuss different policy and other concerns regarding drainage law.
And Mr. Kane, you know, the bill will be going from here to Ways and Means and then the House floor. Does that give you the opportunity to discuss it that you're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, members, there is no scheduled meeting of the Drainage Work Group in the immediate future, so I don't think that there'll be an opportunity for it to address this topic at this time. Many of the members of that work group are involved in one way or another during the legislative session, and therefore we did not schedule a meeting during session.
Representative
Long. Chairman, in all due respect to Mr. King, they ought to be able to do this, and it's a subject that begged to be looked at when they did their review last year. This should have been done when they did their major revisions last year. I'm really not too happy to have it sitting around for another year because we never brought the bill last year thinking they would do it, and then they never did. Now here we are.
And excuse me, I misstated. My motion actually was to go to the General Register. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who has the authority to levy the assessment? Watershed by watershed or what? Who does it?
Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, would be watershed by watershed, or in a lot of cases, local county jurisdiction, because some local counties still have the authority on repairs. So do the county boards or the watershed.
Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that this is a somewhat minor change in their cash flow account, and I would think that if anybody has a major concern on it, they could express it. I heard of Mr. King say that they were concerned because it hadn't been discussed, but with good communications around and pick up the telephone and find out if there's anybody that has a big major concern about it. So you would know that, and they can discuss it over the conference committee call.
And
so I would think that it should go forward.
Yeah, and I think Representative Olin made that point during his introductory comments as well. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
The next bill, I think Representative Morrow is ready. We've had quite a few people in and out. We've already adopted the division report.
Oh, there we are. So, Representative Leader renews his motion that House File 3090 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. And you have an amendment, as I understand it?
Mr. Chair, members, I met with Mark Shepard. We talked with Representative Kahn. The language will stay as is. We had the more oral amendment earlier, but the limitation on line 1.92, as a professional engineer, takes out the possibility of a landscape architect or a land surveyor or someone else filling this position. It would be limited, essentially, members, to a civil engineer.
Okay, so the discussion led to greater
discussion led to agreement, and there's no further need to change the language.
Okay, any discussion on the motion then at 33? Yeah, we adopted the oral amendment, did we not? There's some question about whether we did adopt that oral amendment after we got into the discussion.
Mr. Chair,
yeah, we did. Okay, we're clarifying that, and we're told that we did. Okay. Chair then, or Representative Leader, renews his motion that House File 3090 be recommended to pass as amended and placed in the General. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. No announcements other than we'll be meeting next week. So with that, meeting adjourned.